Stanley, this is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Governor Lynch's final State of the State address yesterday covered what you might expect, a list of achievements by his administration and a wish list of what he hopes to accomplish before he leaves office. But in between was a concern about deep political divides at the Statehouse and a message that Granite Staters deserve better.
There's a harshness in the air, in the tone and the nature of our communications, and particularly within this building. That's not healthy for our people, and it's not healthy for our democracy. We can disagree without demonizing one another. Vigorous debate is important, but our citizens expect us to behave with dignity and with respect.
But Lynch's speech contained many of his own disagreements with actions taken by Republican lawmakers, reductions in the cigarette tax and motor vehicle registrations, a 50% cut in higher education funding, and gun legislation he called wrong for public safety. For their part, GOP leaders said the governor's address was yet another call for higher taxes and more spending, which they said were non-starters in the legislature. Today in The Exchange, we'll hear highlights from Governor Lynch's speech, what issues and themes he raised, and whether his ideas are dead on arrival given huge GOP majorities in the legislature and the politicking of an election year. Let's hear from you, too, if you listen to the governor's speech. What's your overall reaction? Where do you think the speech was on target? Where was it off base? And was there anything the governor left out of his speech that you wish he'd said? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. With me in studio are Josh Rogers, NHPR Statehouse reporter. He covered the speech yesterday. Josh, thanks for being here.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar at the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University and author of the popular website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, welcome back. Nice to see you, too.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, and Dean, to you first, overall, how would you characterize this speech?
It was a very interesting speech. You know, Governor Lynch is not known for his fiery rhetoric. His speeches have a pretty standard flow to them. He starts with jobs. He ends with the environment. Somewhere in the middle, he talks about health care and first responders and education. And this had that same flow to it. But once I got through the speech and thought about it for a little bit, you know, I think for Lynch, this was a fairly aggressive speech. I think it reflected a little bit of frustration over dealing with the Republican Congress, Republican state legislature, that in some sense seems to be kind of trying to run the clock out on him and hope that they get a Republican governor in the next election. So there was a lot of kind of juicy stuff in there in terms of some barbs directed at the Republicans, and also a call for at the same time, you know, working together, a common goal. And you know, there's a little bit of conflict there. But I think, you know, it was sort of pretty much what you'd expect from Lynch. But I think for him, it was maybe up a notch because of some of the difficulties he's had with the state legislature.
Well, and Josh, in preparing for yesterday, you look back at Governor Lynch's past State of the State addresses. How did this one compare?
Well, it was a little bit longer. And I guess I would agree with Dean that it is in some ways of a piece with Lynch's speeches in that it talked about incremental change. It talked about preserving an approach that the governor has long said has put New Hampshire at the forefront in the laundry list of categories that all governors tend to refer to in these speeches: the healthiest, the safest, the most fantastic place to have children, et cetera. That was all there. But at the same time, you know, there was a bit more of an edge to the governor's warning, let's not mess this up by undoing what has made New Hampshire, you know, in his mind, the most fantastic place on earth. And some of those issues are pending now. Same-sex marriage, we don't know when that's going to be voted on. Certainly a lot of the – particularly a lot of these bills are emanating from the House. There's a sort of more ideological bent to some of the House members. And while Lynch always calls for cooperation, you know, this last 2 years has been tough because he's never faced a speaker like William O'Brien who – you know, unabashedly opposes the governor on so many things and, you know, comes out of a sort of a different political culture, frankly. You know, he had a press conference yesterday where he gave a 4-page response to the State of the State speech, you know, taking the governor to task it's certainly not something that that I can imagine the other speakers the governor's had to deal with or other recent Republican speakers would have bothered to do. They tend to have a press availability, but nothing like Speaker O'Brien had yesterday. So there is a lot of similarities between the governor's speeches, but certainly, you know, he's dealing with a different cast of characters.
And we'll hear a little bit of what Speaker O'Brien said yesterday. But Dean Spiliotis, following up on something Josh said, I was struck by that too. He said, look, my wife is a doctor and the cardinal rule of medicine is do no harm. Then he told the legislature, don't mess up. That seemed very un-Lynchian to me.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the first tip-offs, I think, that he was actually going to have a little bit more of an edge in his speech. You know, it was a veiled attack on the Republicans for what he views as kind of an agenda that is taking New Hampshire off of a good track. And as you know, as Josh said, Lynch used kind of a standard tactic that governors use, in which, you know, they say New Hampshire may have problems. You acknowledge that people are struggling because of the recession, but then you go on to compare New Hampshire favorably to virtually every other state out there with a raft of statistics showing that we do well in terms of a number of different quality of life measures. So, you know, you acknowledge the problems, but you say we're on the right track, we're doing better than most other states. Let's not mess it up by getting distracted with the conservative agenda.
Our number here in the exchange for you to join us again is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. Today in the exchange, we're looking back at Governor Lynch's State of the State speech. We'll play you highlights throughout the hour and get your reactions to the speech at 1-800-892-6477. Now, Josh, you mentioned the gay marriage vote that will be coming up in the legislature this year. I want to hear what Governor Lynch said about that vote first, and then ask you a couple things about it.
New Hampshire has a long and proud tradition of fighting for the rights of all of our people, and a tradition of leaving people alone to pursue their own happiness. As governor, I intend to uphold that centuries-old tradition, and I will stand firm against any legislation that would strip any of our citizens of their civil rights.
So, Josh, why the language civil rights? Why doesn't he just come right out and say gay marriage?
Well, you'd have to ask him, but he's always couched this in terms of, I mean, this isn't an issue that has been a comfortable one for him historically. You can look back to civil unions. He on the eve of its passage, he claimed he hadn't read the bill. On gay marriage, he demanded a rewrite when Democrats in the House and Senate were, you know, had to take several votes to get it through, and only squeaked by one vote in one of those votes. But the governor carved out exemptions for religious beliefs, and he's come to see this as something that he doesn't want to bend on. And certainly it's very important to Democrats. I mean, basically, I think there are two Democrats in the House who are seen by people involved in this issue as likely to vote for the repeal. So it is a partisan issue on that level. We're also talking about a couple thousand people who are now married. Those marriages would be invalidated should this come to pass. The question is, when might it come up in the House? Speaker O'Brien, when he was a backbencher, he was one of the lead players in the House in terms of fighting gay marriage. He's made no secret of the fact that he, you know, doesn't believe in it. Yesterday, he actually said that he doesn't see it as a civil rights issue at all. We don't know when he's going to call that vote out of the House. It's likely to have the votes in – I mean, it's – many people believe it will have the votes to get out of the House. Veto-proof margin is not likely. Where it ends up in the Senate, the Senate's not eager to get this one. Senate President Bragdon said yesterday, well, we're waiting to see what comes out of the House. We haven't discussed it. There's a lot of money flowing into the state on both sides of this issue. There's a lot of scrutiny nationally as well. So this will be interesting to watch.
Right. Dean.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating as Josh was talking about Lynch being uncomfortable with this issue. As I was listening to the clip, I was thinking in my head, discomfort was the word that popped into my head. And, you know, progressives in the Democratic Party who favor gay marriage now take that issue on directly in terms of what it means to be married. They're comfortable talking about gay marriage as a marriage issue. You know, Lynch's way of talking about it as a civil right is almost kind of a throwback to more moderate Democratic approach, and it sort of reminds us that he's not cut from the sort of Obama progressive move on mold. He is more of a kind of a centrist Democrat, and that's how traditionally moderate Democrats have talked about the issue of gay marriage as a as a civil liberty and tying it more to just another version of civil union. So I thought that was kind of interesting because as he was saying this in the speech, I was thinking to myself, okay, he must be talking about gay marriage here, but he's not actually saying it. And O'Brien, I believe, said, well, you know, why don't you just say it if that's what you mean?
Well, here's a question for you, Dean. Okay, if you use the language civil rights, does that give Governor Lynch an out in case the legislature crafts a civil unions bill to replace gay marriage that might be, you know, quote unquote, acceptable? Does using the term civil rights give him an out?
In the sense of accepting something less than gay
yes.
marriage? that's a very good question. I think, you know, technically probably, but at this point it's not clear to me that we would go back to that. I think that there's that, you know, sort of as Josh was saying, we already have, you know, 1,000+ people who are married in the state. I think that at this point, given the tenor of the debate nationally, it would be almost difficult to roll it back to a discussion about simply a discussion of civil rights and civil liberties. You know, I think that it's still a controversial issue in many respects, and there, you know, in a number of states around the country, there have been attempts to repeal it. You know, my sense of the public opinion data now is that New Hampshireites have generally gotten comfortable with it. Sure, maybe it's technically an out. I don't know that's what he's thinking.
I mean, if you really want to unpack the language of what he said, in addition to that phrase, he also of civil rights, he also said, you know, leave people alone to pursue happiness. I think that, you know, he means leave the people who alone who are married and pursuing their happiness in that vein.
Another quick hot button point that he raised yesterday, to the disappointment of Senator Lou D'Alessandro, Democrat of Manchester, Joss, the governor made a pretty strong stance against expanded gambling.
Well, that's not really a surprise. I mean, he has suggested that, you know, he opposes it. I mean, it took him a long while to get there. He needed to be convinced that it would not harm the quality of life. You may remember, in order to quell talk when Democrats were in charge of passing gambling, he agreed to have a commission that looked at it that, you know, came to conclusions that, you know, there would be trade-offs, but that it would probably harm quality of life. With Massachusetts having passed casinos, that certainly changes the equation. And it's an issue that has tended to split both caucuses, Republican and Democrat. There are a lot of Democrats who like gambling. There are a lot of conservative Republicans who hate it. Getting it through, although, I mean, there might be a chance that because people get desperate for money with Massachusetts having it, and you can make an argument. But it wasn't a surprise that he's against it. But that was one of his clear, I will veto it.
All right.
It wasn't simply standing firm.
Well, coming up, more highlights from the governor's speech, including tobacco taxes, education funding, and guns, and your phone calls at 1-800-892-6477.
Good morning. It's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members and from North Branch Construction, building green for their clients and themselves. Project portfolio at the newly designed webpage, northbranch.net. And from Cooper Cargill Chand, attorneys invested in the people and organizations doing business throughout the region. Offices in North Conway and Berlin, coopercargillchand.com. More on Governor Lynch's State of the State address on the Exchange on NHPR and the 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, Florida's GOP primary results, and the race ahead. New Hampshire weather today, cloudy and milder with high temperatures near 40 in the North Country, ranging to 50 to 55 in central and southern parts of the state. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy for most of the state, lows from 25 to 30, cloudy with some snow showers across the North Country, lows near 20 degrees. And tomorrow, mostly cloudy, highs from 30 north, ranging to 40 in the south. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a recap of the governor's State of the State address yesterday. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. If you listened to the governor's speech, what's your overall reaction to it? Where do you think it was on target? Where was it off base, in your opinion? And how optimistic are you that the governor and lawmakers might be able to work together on some of the priorities outlined yesterday? Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. With me in studio, Josh Rogers and Dean Spiliotis. And gentlemen, Michael commented on our Facebook page. He says, can't really argue with Lynch's record, except to say that threatening to veto any upcoming legislation on expanded gaming in the state will spark a fight he can't win. Michael says, I don't gamble, but I can see the logic in laying the groundwork for casinos in New New Hampshire, a groundswell that has gained momentum for decades, more so now than ever. Having already allowed incrementally more gaming in the state merely underscores the hypocrisy that polarizes the New Hampshire legislature. Michael concludes by saying it's not a question of if we're going to casinos, but when. Let's have an intelligent debate about it and then get to work putting expanded gaming to work for the good people of New Hampshire. Michael, thanks for that comment. And Dean Spiliotis, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I think there is a case to be made that we're slowly heading in that direction. I think, you know, the environment now in terms of whether or not to have it and some of the state-run lotteries expanding their offerings, et cetera, all suggest that the issue is not going away. What I found interesting in the speech was it was a very brief part of the speech, just a couple lines that he would not allow gambling is he couched it in the context of damaging New Hampshire's brand. And if you listen to the speech as a whole, it is this idea that, you know, New Hampshire has a very specific set of economic and quality of life characteristics. Businesses like that, right? And that's what creates jobs. And if you damage that, businesses are not going to be drawn here, and we're going to lose jobs, and that would be problematic. And throughout the speech, gambling is one example. He talked about this idea that that you know different things that the Republican legislature is doing. Gambling would be one example if it were to pass. Those are all things that may hurt the employment outlook here in the long term. And I thought that was an interesting strategy.
Michael, thanks for that comment on our Facebook page. Again, our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And gentlemen, let's talk about an issue where a lot of people thought when the legislature reconvened, this new legislature, that, okay, they'll at least be able to get together on this because everybody in the State House leadership believes in the need for a constitutional amendment on education funding. Before we talk about it, let's hear what the governor said.
To strengthen the opportunity for all of our students, we need, however, flexibility to direct more aid to the communities and to the children with the greatest needs. And that's hard to do under the current Supreme Court rulings, which require the state to spend the same base amount for every student in every town. That is why I believe we need a constitutional amendment. Now, I support a bipartisan amendment that would improve our ability to give every child the opportunity for a quality education. I remain committed to working with any legislator who shares the goal of an amendment that allows us to target state education aid and affirms the state's responsibility to our schools. And I will oppose any amendment that would allow the state to abandon its responsibility for educating our children.
So what's he saying there, Josh Rogers? I will oppose any amendment that, quote, abandons our responsibility to educate our children.
Well, basically something that totally undoes the Claremont rulings entirely. And, you know, you ask four lawyers their opinion and you may get, you know, more opinions than lawyers on what that what that means. But surely this issue has been tough. I mean, there have been umpteen attempts. And Republican leaders, this crew at least, want something that would essentially cleanly undo in the House, cleanly undo Claremont and make it return it to a local issue. And the governor's not going to go for that. Not that he has any technical say in a constitutional amendment. The Senate leaders have suggested a little bit more flexibility in what they want, something that would allow targeting, something that would mean that, you know, property-rich towns might not get any money, whereas property-poor towns would get money, or perhaps the state would, you know, act as a guarantor of adequacy. None of these are new ideas. Getting the votes has been tough, and even if you've got the votes, getting it through the voters would be tougher. So while theoretically this is an issue they should all agree on, and you know, the track record would suggest that this is going to be tough, if not nearly impossible, to get agreement on.
Well, right, and that raises the question in my mind, Dean Spiliotis. I mean, the legislature and various governors have gone around and around on this since Claremont II came down in December of 97. So why do they keep trying? I mean, at some point, why don't you just give up?
Well, I think there's always a hope that there is some kind of comprehensive solution to the problem so that you have a little bit more stability. And again, the other part of the education discussion in the speech was about budget reductions by the state legislature. And here, again, Lynch used the same strategy he used on gambling, where he tied it into New Hampshire's brand, that it's an educated workforce that is going to attract employers to the state, that will help the economy prosper. And then if you make these cuts in building aid and tuition assistance, in the university system. I think he used the word short-sighted to describe those cuts. So I think part of it is an argument to find an overall solution that will provide stability to the school so that they can educate as necessary. But the other aspect of the speech was this idea that these budget cuts are short-sighted because, again, it damages our long-term ability to attract employers to the state.
Well, and on precisely that point, Dean, let's hear what Governor Lynch said about the legislature's rollback last year of 10 cents of the tobacco tax.
There are tax reductions that can spur job growth here in New Hampshire. Innovative companies create jobs and lay the foundation for a stronger future for our state. 5 years ago, we put in place a research and development tax credit to attract companies to create the products of the future right here in New Hampshire. This year, I am proposing that we double the research and development tax credit. This is a tax credit that works to help create jobs. The same cannot be said of the cut in the tobacco tax. The cut in the tobacco tax was nonsensical. That money would have better been spent on our community college and university systems, for example. We should roll it back and use the revenue to invest in our economic future in New Hampshire.
Governor Lynch in his State of the State speech yesterday. Again, today in the Exchange, we're getting your reactions, questions, and comments at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. If you heard the speech, what did you think, your overall reaction, and what is your specific thought on some of the themes the governor raised, whether it's the rollback in tobacco taxes that he just mentioned, or education funding, or his vow to oppose expanded gambling and to oppose a possible repeal of New Hampshire's gay marriage law. 1-800-892-6477 is our number, the email exchange at nhpr.org. So Josh Rogers, again, that sound that we just heard on both the R&D tax credit, which he said helps create jobs. He says the same cannot be said for the rollback of 10 cents in the cigarette tax. What's the point, Josh, of raising this issue? Is the legislature likely to say, gee, you're right, Governor, we hadn't thought about that way, and add the 10 cents back?
No, they're not. Surely, I mean, this issue is one that many Democrats at the State House and surely the governor's office and the general public may view as emblematic of, you know, the ideological, you know, excess to critics or the ideological purity to supporters of the Republican majority. Governor Lynch had relied on raising the tobacco tax in all of his prior budgets. It became almost automatic. You know, it's often couched in terms of a public health benefit. You know, the Republicans said, you know, if we lower this tax, this will add to the constellation of issues that create the so-called New Hampshire advantage. It will draw cross-border trade. Thus far, it's underperformed. And after the speech, the governor's the response by Republicans was, you know, he wants to raise the tobacco tax, like that's not going to happen. You know, as it went through in the last budget, it actually contains a provision that if it fails to hit revenue targets, that tax will automatically be restored to what it had been. And so we may end up there if it doesn't end up performing as designed. But this, you know, these are fighting words, also, the cuts to higher education, 50% cut, that's a big deal. Obviously, tuition costs have gone up as a response. Higher education costs is an issue that's affecting, you know, everybody. And so these are areas where, you know, again, the governor says don't mess it up. This is an example in his mind would be messing it up, cutting higher education and reducing the tobacco tax.
At what point, Dean, are raising these old grievances, the tobacco tax, the withdrawal of a $30 motor vehicle registration fee, at what point is raising these old gripes just Lynch making his case saying, hey, I want to remind everybody I still oppose this? And how much is this a template for those Democrats who might want to be the next governor?
Probably a little bit of each. I think obviously Lynch realizes that, you know, in the last year there's probably not going to be movement on any of these issues, but he's going to raise them nonetheless. I think Josh underscores what's going on here. I mean, it really is kind of giving you a sense of competing philosophies of government. And Republicans, if you saw some of the comments that came out of the leadership after the speech, they talked a lot about smaller government, lower taxes, more individual liberty as a means of spurring economic growth. Lynch, in contrast, in the speech talked about not demonizing government, that government actually has an important role to play. That is going to be one of the central issues in the debate in November, not only here locally, but at the national level in the presidential election. So, yes, clearly he's airing grievances. I don't think he expects much to change, but he's absolutely setting the table for the next contest in November.
What do you think about that, Josh, real quick?
Well, I think it's true, and I also think that you know, the state is going to be scraping around for money probably to get out of this budget cycle. And so I think the governor wants to, you know, sort of lay out where he – I mean, he doesn't want more cuts to government or have taken more revenue off the table by cutting further taxes, which, you know, is under contemplation by Republicans. And I also think he wants to cast the Republican majority as perhaps out of their thinking as being outside the mainstream of New Hampshire thought.
Here's another issue where Republicans and Democrats both say they want to move forward, gentlemen, and that's the construction project of great interest to most to the most populated part of the state, the southern tier, the expansion of Interstate 93. This got a lot of attention yesterday from both the governor and Republicans. First, let's hear what the governor said.
Last year, I called on the legislature to come together to fund the expansion of I-93. Not only did the legislature not act on I-93, it cut overall highway fund revenue by $90 million. Words alone will not raise the $365 million needed to complete the project. I am willing to put reasonable options on the table, and I'm asking the legislature to do so as well. If we come together and show the necessary political will, we can complete the widening of Interstate 93 through Manchester in just 4 years.
Okay, so Dean Spiliotis willing to put any reasonable ideas, reasonable options on the table, but he didn't do that in his speech. He didn't say how he would fund this expansion.
Right. He used it as an opportunity to try to point out that it's the Republicans who are dragging their feet on this. I thought this was a very interesting part of the speech. It was a long chunk of the speech. You know, I thought it was interesting because he kind of used the sort of kitchen sink economic argument. He talked about every conceivable constituency that might be affected by not expanding I-93. He talked about commuters. He talked about economic development at exit 4A. He talked about long-term economic growth up the corridor, construction, et cetera. So, you know, really trying to point out that this is important to New Hampshire's economic livelihood. It's important to the economy and jobs. And it's the Republicans who are dragging their feet on this by cutting money. And Republicans, as we know, said in return that they're on board, but not if it means additional taxes being raised. So I don't know that this really moved it any further down the road, but it was kind of a pressure tactic from Lynch.
Well, and it was interesting, and Josh, you and I spoke yesterday with DJ Betancourt, House Majority Leader, Republican from Salem, who is also very interested in getting this project moving forward, especially given his constituency. But he didn't want to put any ideas on the table either. So nobody wants to say boo on this or you go first.
Well, it is interesting. I agree with Dean that the likelihood that there's going to be any quick movement on this, you know, seems slight at the moment. But this I-93, I mean, it's historically been an issue that Republicans have pushed, the widening of I-93. And if we're just talking about geography, the train we're talking about running from the Massachusetts border up to Manchester, that's you know, there are basically no Democratic legislators until you get to Manchester along 93. So this is something that directly affects their constituents. And, you know, the governor cast it as an economic development issue. It is. And one thing that was interesting is that the Republicans quickly said, well, you know, we're not going to put up toll booths and we're not going to
raise the gas tax.
Governor Lynch didn't propose that. He didn't propose bonding, which is where it would likely go, some form of bonding. The Republicans have indicated they might be open to that, but nobody's I guess we'll see if anyone moves first. But
well,
I do think in terms of pressuring them, they say they want to send a sign, New Hampshire's open for business. Speedier transit on 93 would be one way to do that.
Well, and House Majority Leader Betancourt did say to us yesterday, Josh, he did mention bonding, so that does seem like something they're interested in putting on the table. Governor Lynch didn't put anything on the table, but his transportation commissioner, Chris Clement, joined us last week, and he did, I don't want to say he came right out in favor of a 5-cent increase in the gas tax, but he kept saying, imagine what we could do if we had a 5-cent increase in the gas tax.
Yeah, I mean, the governor, I mean, you know, some out there may recall that when the governor ran against Jim Coburn, he leapt on a misstatement that Jim Coburn made about potentially raising the gas tax. And so the governor has somewhat boxed himself in. I mean, he's opposed raising the gas tax all the way through, and it would be quite a surprise if he were to propose raising it now. I mean, obviously,
so
he favored the registration fee. I mean, I think we're moving towards some sort of bonding.
Uh-huh.
And whether or not he and the commissioner are on the exact same page. I mean, commissioners, they're not the ones who are getting elected. So there can be differences.
Well, gentlemen, I want to cover an issue that also came up yesterday, an issue that has also created some divides in New Hampshire, but not along the traditional partisan lines, and that's Northern Pass. This is the giant hydropower project that would bring hydropower from Canada down through New Hampshire to end up on the New England grid. Let's hear what the governor said, and then I have a few questions.
One of the biggest issues facing our state and our environment is the proposal for Northern Pass. Now, I support bringing more renewable power to our state. It's in our long-term interest to diversify our power sources, and I don't think we should dismiss out of hand the idea of hydropower coming from Canada. But the proponents of Northern Pass need to listen better. This project cannot happen without local support, and it should not happen with eminent domain.
Dean Spiliotis, what do you think? Why bring up Northern Pass in a State of the State speech?
Well, it's been a very important issue for the North Country, obviously, and for the state as a whole in terms of energy prices that have been rising in recent years. I thought it was interesting because, you know, it is the case that proponents have probably not handled moving forward with it as they should have, and I think that's what he was getting at when he said they need to listen better to local proponents. It's also a way to connect with your constituents to show that you're in support of the people who may be affected by this. And, you know, eminent domain, obviously having your property taken is not going to be a popular option. So, you know, he's not dismissing the idea that we need to consider additional energy sources that may lower the cost of energy. But I think it's a recognition that proponents have just not handled it well, and in the long run, that may actually undercut it.
Now, on the practical level, Josh, does the governor of the state of New Hampshire have any yes or no power over whether this project goes forward?
I don't believe so. I mean, surely there are bills pending at the State House regarding eminent domain. And yesterday, Senate President Peter Bragdon joked with some of us in the press a little bit about how it was nice to have the governor's support for not using eminent domain after the Senate had passed its bill. But this issue is an interesting one for Lynch because, as some may recall, when this project was initially announced, which was during campaign season, the governor quickly made his way up to Franklin to talk about all the jobs this was going to create. And then when this became, unpopular up north, the governor distanced himself a bit from this project and said, well, you know, all along I've always believed that this was really something that needed to have buy-in from the local folks. And so, he obviously sees the potential economic benefits, but, you know, this is something that has obviously gotten the public's blood up.
All right. Well, after a short break, we'll hear some of the Republican response to the speech and take your calls. So stay with us.
State Impact examines how government affects the economic health of our state.
A cut in federal highway funds of 35% has left the fate of the state's most ambitious transportation project in limbo.
State Impact is also analyzing data about businesses in New Hampshire.
New Hampshire's doing better than the national average as far as our unemployment goes. Then, 79% of people thought that the economy would stay the same.
And you can hear more from the project on NHPR and NHPR.org.
Support for NHPR comes from You Are Members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock, providing online health tools and podcasts for a healthier New Hampshire. Information at dartmouthhitchcock.org. And Kimball Union Academy, a coeducational boarding and day school for grades 9 through 12 and postgraduate in Meriden, New Hampshire. KUA.org, creating a vision for the world. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, the super influence of super PACs, plus new information on who's donating all those dollars. Email us your questions or comments before the program at exchange@nhpr.org, and then be sure to join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're hearing highlights from Governor Lynch's State of the State speech and getting your reaction to it. Let's hear from you. If you heard the governor's speech, what did you think of it? Where do you think it was on target? Where was it off base? Was there anything the governor left out of his speech that you wish he'd said? And how hopeful are you that the governor and lawmakers can work together on some of the priorities he outlined yesterday, whether that's the expansion of Interstate 93 or education funding? Join us 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. My guests are Josh Rogers, NHPR Statehouse reporter, and Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar at the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University. And gentlemen, Republicans certainly had their reactions to the governor's speech yesterday, including a press availability by House Speaker Bill O'Brien. Let's hear a little bit about what Speaker O'Brien said.
We need a governor who will sign a budget that recognizes New Hampshire cannot prosper if we continually hike taxes and try to budget according to desires rather than reality. We need a governor who will sign tax relief for employers to ensure that our state is no longer dead last for high business taxes. We need a governor who will sign right to work to attract businesses here and add good new jobs. We need a governor who will direct the Attorney General to join the lawsuit to fight Obamacare or any other federal takeover of our health care system.
In other words, Josh Rogers, we need a Republican governor.
Yes, and he was talking about what he hoped would, 2012 November would net the state, and talking about what would be done, should the cast of characters that are there now return as well. The Speaker O'Brien, he and Governor Lynch don't get along well. They don't see eye to eye. This is not news, but certainly the Speaker he's not afraid to push these sort of hot button issues again and again and again. I mean, we saw with right to work, which you mentioned there, that, he was going to do all he could to try to make that happen. And, we saw the governor's speech yesterday. He said that he took aim at Republicans for, in his words, attacking public sector workers. And he said he would never allow their right to organize to be taken away, which got thunderous applause from Democrats and some of the sort of union supporters in the crowd. That's what O'Brien wants. We'll see what sort of, we'll wait for November. We don't know what's going to happen, anywhere on the ticket.
Dean?
Yeah, listening to that language took me right back to the 2010 midterm election and the rise of the Tea Party. That was the kind of language we heard in 2010. I remember a lot of the platforms of local state legislatures. So in a sense, O'Brien is being very consistent to the vision that Republicans had in taking back majorities in the state legislature. So, they came in saying they were going to do certain things and they would be opposed to a Democratic vision of government. They have an alternative vision that he lays out, and they've been consistent. And again, a lot is going to hinge on whether or not we have a Republican or a Democratic governor after the next. I mean, you hear that and you realize how different things will be if we get a Republican governor versus another Democratic governor.
I mean, one thing that was also interesting and slightly comical was the State of the State features all these statistics. New Hampshire is number one for this. It's number one for that. Speaker O'Brien said that, he was proud to have learned recently that New Hampshire has moved from 50th in business taxes to 46th in some ranking that the Tax Foundation does. He says, he's not satisfied with that ranking, but the Republicans have been making the case that progress is being made under their watch that is making New Hampshire a better place. So, Lynch can say they're messing up what has made New Hampshire what it is. Republican leaders believe that they're restoring New Hampshire to what its founders wanted, and that will make it better. So it really is a clash of visions that isn't likely to fade away.
Well, and it's interesting what you say, Josh. And Dean, we talked earlier about how Governor Lynch's State of the State was partly about him, but partly about what he hopes a Democratic candidate for governor will take on when he or she runs. And this Republican State of the State response is the same thing, Dean. It's kind of a manifesto for the Republican governor.
Absolutely. It's really a continuation of the debate that has been percolating for a long time, but that really hit its stride in 2010 with the Tea Party movement and the change in control of the state legislature. So, it's amazing how, these kind of fundamental competing visions that Josh talked about really underpin the two parties here in the state and nationally, as a matter of fact. And we come back around every 2 years. And I think that You see that in the consistency on both sides. And so we're going to be talking about this again in November, I'm sure, the same set of social and economic issues and kind of competing. I thought it was interesting, just as an aside, where Lynch did have that section in the speech where he said, you know, people shouldn't badmouth government. Government is people. And, you know, people are the central resource in our state. I mean, that is a very clear statement of one way. And Obama has basically said the same thing. So, you know, the table is set for this ideological clash that we had in 10 to take center stage again.
Well, one interesting thing to watch, well, what will happen or what is happening to moderate voices, I mean, certainly in Washington as well as in Concord, you know, Governor Lynch. A lot of people would say, you know, he's a fairly centrist guy. He's quite moderate. There's certainly a lot in the legislature who are to the left of him. And there certainly historically have been plenty in the legislature who are to the left of the current leadership contingent. What role, you know, sort of Main Street Republicans, moderate Republicans, you know, more traditional in New Hampshire will play? I mean, the last elections may have been a lot about who decided to run rather than what the people, voters necessarily wanted. And so I think that given the clashes that are going on here in Washington, we're likely to see heightened participation by people who might be slightly beyond the activist core, particularly in a presidential year. So the fallout this fall should be interesting and telling.
Yeah, it was interesting. Just as an aside, you know, Lynch made this call for seeking common ground and working together. And obviously we heard Speaker O'Brien's response. It didn't seem to take it to heart necessarily. But then I saw a quote from Jeb Bradley in the paper saying that, yeah, that's a good lesson I learned from my mom, that we need to work together and be civil. So there are some differences in some members of the Republican side of the legislature.
We talked about some of the hot button issues that came up in this speech, including gay marriage and Northern Pass and cigarette taxes and so forth. One more I want to cover with you, gentlemen, concerns the many, many bills surrounding gun rights here in the Granite State. Let's hear what the governor said.
I support the right of our citizens to bear arms. We have had a long bipartisan tradition of reasonable laws that balance the rights of gun owners with the needs of public safety. Unfortunately, there's a rash of proposed legislation that would undermine that tradition, from a bill repealing gun licenses to a bill forcing colleges to allow guns in classrooms and in dorms. We should always make public safety our highest priority. These bills are wrong for public safety, and they are wrong for New Hampshire.
Now, Josh, there were some gun bills that the governor and law enforcement opposed last year that went through anyway. What about the bills that he mentioned for this year?
Well, some of the bills that he mentions have been recommended out of committee to interim study, which in year two of a legislative session is a polite way of saying that they're likely to die. So some of these bills are not being pushed by leaders and are not likely to get a strong consideration. But at the same time, there have been many, many bills proposed on guns, and there are a lot of, you know, real Second Amendment absolutists who were elected in the last election. And, you know, the governor has made common cause with law enforcement. That they've been a key part of his base of support throughout his time in office. And, you know, again, this is a competing vision about, you know, are one's constitutional rights under the Second Amendment, you know, abridgeable in any form or fashion? Or are there reasonable limits that could be placed on, you know, people's right to bear arms? And so he's again trying to cast some of the members, particularly in the House, of being, you know, well outside the mainstream. Some of these bills are likely to be rejected by the House, but certainly the bills that his vetoes were overridden on, you know, being able to
stand your ground,
where you're not required to attempt to retreat in a public context, where you could essentially shoot somebody or use a weapon against somebody who was perceived to be threatening you. I mean, a lot of people thought that. I mean, and, you know, to say nothing of the rule change at the State House that allowed lawmakers to, wear guns on the floor of the legislature and around the state house.
You know, you talked earlier, Dean Spiliotis, about national echoes in our own politics, and Josh mentioned it too. And one of those echoes that came up in this speech was health care, Dean, with the governor saying, you know, while we try to repair frayed relations between politicians in Concord and the state's hospitals, and we've talked about that lawsuit a lot on this program, he said, let's also be mindful of what's happening at the national level.
Right, absolutely. And that's in the context of the current debate over repealing Obamacare, the Republican debate over Romney Care. Governor Lynch mentioned a health exchange in Utah, I believe. And, you know, part of the debate in the Republican primary has been about whether or not, to the extent to which this is a state's rights issue. I mean, that's one of the defenses that Romney has used, is that each state needs to craft a health care solution that best works for a state rather than at the national level. So, you know, in a way, Lynch was kind of feeding into that discussion. You know, health care is going to be one of the central arguments in the presidential election, because there are all kinds of economic implications for job creation and economic growth. So, yeah, I mean, you seem to kind of be feeding into that issue about, you know, each state kind of doing what works best for itself. We talked about maybe setting up a New Hampshire health exchange as well.
Well, and we talked about that, I believe, last week on the program, if people want more information. Did you want to jump in there, Josh?
Well, I think one interesting thing on that matter is that that's an issue on which the House and the Senate seem to be in real disagreement. The leadership, the Senate sees it more or less as Lynch does, like it's prudent to set up something that we can have some control over, lest the federal government decide it's going to do it. People in the House say, the leaders say, well, you know, essentially, hell no, you know, this is unconstitutional. We're not going to do it. We're going to fight, you know, so-called Obamacare tooth and nail. And it'll be interesting how that plays out, because there are, I mean, certainly all the insurance carriers, the BIA, you know, other groups have sort of essentially said, you know, we ought to do this to have some certainty, you know, have some ability to navigate what may be forced on us otherwise. And, you know, House leadership is going to be unbending on that issue. And there are real differences between, you know, philosophical differences between how to handle this between Republicans in the Senate, who favor an approach somewhere along the lines of what Lynch was laying out, in the House, who are absolutely opposed.
Well, it's complicated, and not everybody thinks that if New Hampshire does create its own exchange, that really, you know, makes a difference. The federal government will still have oversight, jurisdiction about what those exchanges look like. But we'll leave that debate on the table for now. A couple last questions for you, gentlemen. First to you, Josh Rogers. Is there any initiative from this speech that will go anywhere beyond the speech yesterday? I'm talking about the rollback of the 10-cent gas tax, or coming together in I-93, or an education funding amendment. Any on this list of aspirations from Governor Lynch that might actually go somewhere this year?
Hard to say. I mean, certainly the research and development tax credit would be something that people might look at. I mean, it's not the most exciting one. You know, everyone would like to be a feather in everyone's cap if they could get a constitutional amendment to voters. The likelihood of there being agreement on the language it seems slight. Other than that, I mean, everyone would want to work towards 93, widening that. So there might be something there. That's a priority for Senator Chuck Morse, who's head of the Senate Finance Committee. He's from Salem. He wants it. Republican leaders would want it. I don't think Lynch was talking about raising the gas tax or tolls. So, you know, if they can agree on bonding, that might be something.
Well, and he's supported bonding in the past, so. Dean.
Yeah. No, I think that's a very reasonable assessment of the probability of any of this stuff getting done. You know, there's always a tension in an election year between trying to show voters that you have their public interest at heart and that you're actually trying to get things done in the legislature and with a governor. Same thing at the national level. And also the idea that you're gearing up for the election, that there really is no reason to compromise on some of these issues because there are larger ideological visions at stake. So it's a balance. And so, you know, you may get one or two issues where people want to show progress, but the reality is that, you know, at this point in the political cycle, particularly in a presidential year, everybody's gearing up for November.
And here's a question that I haven't heard answered, and maybe that's because there's not an answer. Josh, I'll turn to you first, but Dean, I want to hear from you too. What does John Lynch do after this? There's been a lot of speculation about who will replace him. Does he just fade into the sunset? Could he possibly be interested in higher office? He's always said, no, I love being governor. Does anybody know what John Lynch is going to do after this?
I mean, he may know. Maybe Dr. Lynch knows. He certainly has suggested, never suggested that he was interested in running for anything. Certainly there was talk of him running for the Senate. It's hard to – I think he – I take him at his word on this one. I think he likes being governor. I don't think he intends to run for office. I think four terms was plenty in the corner office. He, you know, has been pretty scrupulous about sort of maintaining his brand, you know, in the same way he talks about New Hampshire's brand. You know, his brand is someone who came in, you know, wanted to serve, wanted to do what he thought was best for New Hampshire. And, you know, I expect him to step up. I mean, who knows? I mean, obviously he has experience in business. You know, people have talked about him being a plausible person to, you know, he was on the head of the board for UNH, perhaps involving himself in higher education. Who knows? I guess we'll wait and see.
Right. Dean?
Yeah, no way to know. The one thing I will say is whenever I talk to people who are kind of in his general orbit about this issue of him running for, you know, maybe running for the Senate one day or some other national office, they just say, no, this is sort of not what he's about. You know, I guess you never say never, but that doesn't seem likely. And I think Josh is right. He does have this brand. I think there may be opportunities for him to be involved in the public discourse. But you just don't know. You never really know until once they get out of office kind of what kind of taste they have for remaining in the public eye, whether they just kind of want to go off and do, you know, private work consulting or some other type of private venture, or maybe set up some sort of foundation or nonprofit or something where they can kind of keep their voice on the public eye. And I just don't have a sense yet of which way he's going to go.
I mean, he did talk about how we have role models for service, and he mentioned former Governor Walter Peterson, with whom he had a close relationship and who did involve himself in the public discourse to some degree. And so it would not be shocking to see Governor Lynch, you know, strike that kind of presence in the public discourse. But I agree with Dean. I have talked to nobody who says the guy's running for anything other than ever. So.
Well, and hopefully we will have Governor Lynch on the exchange soon so that he can tell us about his own future plans as well as get his thoughts on what he hopes to accomplish in the next year. So we hope to bring the governor into our studios soon. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our interns are Karen Gohl and Ryan Lassard. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.